Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence, and featuring Michael Santucci, co-chair of the Intellectual Property Division of the Broward Bar. From the law firm of Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, alimony reform did not pass last year, but we know it will be coming back. Florida has some unique laws governing divorce, and today, Timothy Accaro and his wife, Laura Accaro, two very distinguished counselors at law, with such awards from the U.S. Department of State for their work with the Hague Convention, representing parents attempting to recover children who have been internationally parentally abducted from South Florida. Tim Accaro is also a professor at NSU, Shepherd Broad College of Law. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That's the new name. Thank you. Nobody's going to do a shot on me today. And the reputation of the Accaro Law Group is helping countless clients successfully resolve their family law dispute. But one thing I neglected, and I don't mean to do that to Laura, you also are a recipient of the same award. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Oh, that's incredible. But first, as the song goes, Mike, breaking up is hard to do. Before we get into family law, I'd like to say good evening to legal panel host and dynamic attorney, Mike Santucci.
How are you, Phil? Thanks for the compliment.
I'm doing good. You know, having you here, I don't miss Gary that much.
Yes, sir.
There's actually food left sometimes.
Gary, hopefully drinks. You're listening online on the iHeart app.
Oh, yeah, he'll hunt me down.
Yep.
But Gary will be back next week. Timothy and Laura Accaro from the Accaro Law Group, it's a dynamic duo. It really is. And I think their marriage was made in heaven. I mean that sincerely. Must be an interesting dinner conversation in terms of your cases.
I hope so, because they're family lawyers. So.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, good evening, Tim, and good evening, Laura.
Good evening, Phil.
Good evening, Phil.
In talking to you both, you play off of well each other. I mean, you even answer the questions in tandem, in response. I find that interesting. How long have you two been married, just out of interest?
It will be 4 years in March.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And I understand from the Nova Shepherd Board College of Law, I understand you graduated, Laura, number two in your class.
That's right, yes.
But Tim is a professor. Did he have anything to do with that? Was he a professor?
We didn't
he
need
was
him.
Not my professor.
Although
he is now.
To our audience, I knew that answer. I just can't. I just love pushing buttons as well. Mm-hmm.
Well, I met Tim and Laura in a rather unique way. My band was playing at a festival, and they were there, and we met. They are friends with the drummer of my band. I had the pleasure of meeting them then, and it's a little too loud to talk then, but it's good to have you now.
Well, so. Now we have the headphones on so they can hear you.
Yeah, right.
You know?
I know the Hague Convention to be, that's the procedure we use to serve someone with a lawsuit that's out of the country. Tell me about either one of you. What was your work with the Hague Convention Attorney Network? It makes sense. I would have never thought that the Hague Convention would be the way through which you recover children that were kidnapped or abducted or taken out of the country by a parent or anyone else.
There are actually a number of different conventions at the Hague. The convention that we work on is the Hague Convention on Civil Aspects of International Child Abduction. I became involved with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children probably 20 years ago. And at the law school, we began a program where we would represent on a pro bono basis parents that were left behind in foreign countries who are trying to get their children back from South Florida. We began working with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and then the State Department took over those cases. And really, the State Department receives incoming cases and then tries to match those parents with lawyers, because the U.S. is one of the few countries that reserved on an article in the convention that said we don't provide legal representation to incoming cases. And so there's a dramatic need for lawyers, pro bono lawyers, and so we were doing those cases pro bono through the clinic and continued to do that. We've represented parents from multiple different countries and governmental agencies who are trying to retrieve abducted children from South Florida. And Laura and I have worked on private cases. She's done quite a few cases in just the last few years on her own that have been successful, if you'd like to address those.
We were actually successful in sending a little girl back to Ecuador right before Christmas. I think she probably left Christmas Eve to be reunited with her dad, and she hadn't seen her dad in quite some time. So we were happy to be able to get that order entered right here in Broward County and then send the child back to her family in Ecuador.
In that particular case, Laura was successful in obtaining an order to return the child within approximately 27 days of filing the lawsuit. So the Hague Convention operates different from other cases. Civil cases frequently take a long time. The Hague Convention is designed in this country to be resolved within 6 weeks of filing the petition for return. So they're dynamic cases, they're difficult cases, and they happen quickly.
Yeah, I don't know many family law attorneys that know how to do this, really. I think it's a bit of a subspecialty, certainly.
It's really becoming a niche practice for us. There are not a lot of attorneys who do this kind of work. And there are also not necessarily a lot of law firms that are as nimble as our little firm is, where we can shift gears pretty quickly, get a petition filed, put together a memo of law, and go to trial within a week.
Sure.
Whether that be in federal court or in state court, we're able to shift gears pretty quickly.
And this is primarily pro bono. You donate your service for this in time?
We do a number of pro bono cases.
Right.
The work that I do is pro bono through the university. So when Laura, most of the firm work is done by Laura and associate. Most of my work, legal work, is done through the law school, primarily on a pro bono basis through our Children and Families Law Clinic.
Well, family law is really dynamic, and it that song is so true. Breaking up is hard to do. And we have a host of questions that we want to speak to you about. When it's coming to family law, Mike, go ahead.
Well, the big issue, in the last, I'd say, 4 to 8 years, I follow presidential politics and I follow Supreme Court. You don't want to call that politics, but I don't know lately. But, same-sex marriage being the law of the land now. Now there's also a new practice area, and that's really same-sex divorce or same-sex dissolution of marriage. What are some kind of interesting issues that have come out of this really new practice area? It's like family law like anything else. But have you ever had a case or even read about something that that's created a new frontier here?
I've handled a same-sex dissolution of marriage, and really the key difference from your traditional marriage and divorce is changing the caption and making sure that we don't call them husband and wife spouse number one, spouse number two. Just call them by their names. And for some practitioners that can be a difficult switch. We're used to calling people husband and wife and identifying them that way in our pleadings. One of the other issues that has come up is sometimes recognizing the date of the marriage, because people may have had a civil union in a state where marriage wasn't necessarily legal, and that state might have now, of course, since the Supreme Court has ruled, but there may be different dates for recognizing marriage, and that's important for determining how the assets and liabilities of the marriage will be distributed.
What about biological children? I mean, certain instances they use surrogates or just straight adoption.
Yeah, I think when you're talking about same-sex marriage,
right,
clearly you're not talking about traditional conception and birth. You're talking about usually some sort of medical intervention if you want to use your own genetic product, if you want to use your own egg or sperm to produce a child,
right,
then you're going to have to use medical intervention, otherwise adoption. But once those children are brought into the marriage as products of the marriage, generally they're treated like any other family that is ending through divorce. When you talk about timeshare and custodial issues, the approach continues to be the same in as we look at the child's best interest in the relationship that children have with their parents.
Laura or Tim, whoever really wants to take this, what are your views on alimony reform?
Especially you mentioned timeshare. And we're not talking timeshare on property, audience. We're talking about timeshare within the children.
I'm glad you asked, because the alimony reform bill has been introduced and has passed the legislature and then has been vetoed a couple times in Florida and, in fact, was reintroduced today. It was vetoed previously because some of the alimony reform provisions were retroactive. So couples who had divorced years before and had negotiated for certain property distributions or alimony provisions, the alimony reform bill would have been retroactive and would have kind of done away with some of those negotiated terms. And then another reason that it was vetoed in the past is that it was tied to time-sharing issues with children. I believe that the bill that was just introduced today is a standalone alimony reform bill. Its proponents like this because it will provide some predictability as far as alimony awards. I'm not a fan of alimony reform.
And why is that?
I'm not saying that just because I'm a lawyer who practices in this area.
Right.
I think that alimony is a way that we value different contributions to a marriage. And in my experience, I grew up with a stay-at-home mom. And now 45 years into her being a stay-at-home parent or a homemaker, she has made contributions to the marriage, to rearing children, to making a home, a beautiful place for her and my father. And if my mom were to get divorced now, what's she going to do? She's been out of the workforce for 45 years. I don't know what she would do without alimony or some form of spousal support. So I think it's important to recognize and value those contributions that both spouses make to the marriage, whether it's a stay-at-home dad who does the same thing or a stay-at-home mom.
So the bill is really being viewed as being detrimental to a non-working spouse.
It is. It would seriously cap or do away with permanent alimony. And I think that has serious implications for families. I think that is Florida public policy to promote families. Mm-hmm. They're all different kinds of families. And for younger women, especially who might be considering having a family and staying home with them, they would be taking a real risk in doing that and stepping out of the workforce, losing some key years of earning potential.
I believe 2 years ago, alimony reform bill included a retroactive issue in there. Is that actually correct?
That's correct. It would have eliminated some of the permanent alimony that had been negotiated between couples years before. And that was one of the reasons that the governor had vetoed it.
Well, you did something right there, in my
yes.
opinion.
I will never leave my wife. I'm not going to see this. Just had to say that. That's the first thing that came to my mind. So. Speaking out loud. We talked a little bit about when children are missing or you can't find children. What happens if a spouse is missing? Can you still dissolve a marriage if you don't even know where your spouse is?
Sure. Right. That happens regularly when relationships end. Sometimes they end with a person walking out the door, never to be heard from or seen again. Right. You can obtain a divorce even where you don't know where the physical presence of that party is. You'd have to do a diligent search, legitimately endeavor to try and find them so that they can receive their due process notice. And if you cannot find them, then you can provide service through alternative means rather than personal service. Mm-hmm. You would be limited in the type of relief you could get because of due process notice, but you certainly can obtain a dissolution of marriage in this state as well as others.
In Florida, if I wanted a divorce and my wife did not, she has no choice. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right?
Everyone's shaking their head. Yeah.
The,
yeah. We've We're lucky enough in South Florida to be such an international community, but often when there's a spouse that's missing, they might be out of the country, or they might have, you know, gone back to Colombia to be with their family, or wherever it may be. Do you have to make efforts to actually locate them there, or maybe even serve them with the petition there?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
And
okay.
That goes back to your point about the Hague Convention on Service of International Process, which is expensive because you'd have to obtain foreign process, convert the pleadings into the language of that country. And yeah, it does add time and expense to the process.
But a judge here in Broward is going to require that a petitioner, someone looking to dissolve their marriage, actually take that step and go through Hague.
The answer to that is yes. You'd have to provide notice.
Okay.
To that extent, the spouse who walks out the door never to be heard from again, that would be ideal, right? Because then you don't have to go through all
That's
of that. If you don't know where the person is,
yeah.
if they take off to another country and you don't know where they are and you don't know how to find them and none of their relatives know where they are, that's straightforward. You publish those little tiny ads in the back of the newspaper that no one ever reads. Service by publication.
Yeah.
Lawyers read it over coffee in the morning in the Daily Business Review.
Right.
But one thing I learned from my co-host, Philip Bell, is, a big part of the show is public service. And we have a lot of non-attorney listeners out there that may listen to us really to learn some things. So this is an important question to ask, I think. If you find that your spouse becomes violent or is harassing or stalking you in some way, what are some things that you can do if you find yourself a victim of that sort of abuse?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we know from the news every day that people can be killed in domestic violence mm-hmm. relationships. Domestic violence is a serious problem in this country, and when clients have domestic violence issues in the relationship, the first step is to obtain an injunction for protection against domestic violence in the state of Florida, otherwise referred to commonly as a restraining order. Laura's done quite a bit of work on restraining order cases in the past few months, so I'll let her explain what remedies are available in that context.
So our court system is set up to allow people who are victims of domestic violence to go straight to the courthouse, to the self-help desk, and apply for an injunction. The forms are straightforward. There are clerks available, and there are no filing fees paid through the clerk of court. So it's a very user-friendly process. And once that petition is filed, it's reviewed immediately by a judge, and it's either granted without notice to the other party, or sometimes it's denied. But either way, a hearing would be set about 2 weeks down the road, and then after service, both sides get to come to court and they can explain their position to the judge. But what it does for a victim of domestic violence is provide some immediate relief. It can get a violent person out of the house. It can provide some immediate remedies in terms of police protection, so that if the violent person shows up at your door, you can call the police.
And It's not just men, is it? Women can become violent and harassing as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we've had cases involving both men and women, both as petitioners and respondents. And when someone shows up at the door who's violent, or if a client is in that situation, I like to remind them, call the police first. We cannot help you in that very moment.
Sure.
The number of people who would think, let me call my lawyer while someone's beating me up the door.
No.
I'm sorry, I can't help you right now, but the next day,
after the urgency is dealt with and resolved, is it
Absolutely.
A good time?
Is Absolutely.
That, you guys are set up to do domestic violence cases as well.
Domestic violence cases. There are also causes of action and injunctions for protection against stalking, against dating violence. For example, there may be a parent whose daughter is involved with a guy who is not treating her well, and the daughter may be underage and not able to go apply for an injunction on her own. The parent can go apply for that for their child. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
Mike had an interesting question because we talked about children. Children are not property. But Mike, why don't you ask about? Go ahead.
Yeah, on a prior show, we were talking about people that set up trusts for their pets.
Yeah, that was this week.
How do family pets get dealt with when a marriage is dissolved?
Family pets in the state of Florida are treated as property. Mm-hmm. Simple personal property.
That sounds harsh.
Yeah,
but
right?
It's
our dog sleeps in our bed.
Yeah.
It's a specific legal significance.
And yeah. What's happening, the trend around the country, is that many states are adopting considerate approaches. New York, for example, they can spend at least half day taking evidence about what is in the pet's best interest, in the sense of who fed the dog, which side of the bed did the dog sleep on, who walked the dog,
amazing,
who bathed the dog. And when you think about it, those are ways in which we demonstrate our commitment, love, and affection to our animals. And so animals play a very important role in our society, right? Therapy animals, service animals,
sure,
and pets. And so courts take testimony in divorce cases, equitable distribution, thinking about tax consequences. Judges have to consider tax consequences. They have to take valuations. So the idea that a judge should not accept any testimony about who cared for the dog or who fed the dog is completely incompatible with our otherwise very thoughtful approach to the distribution of assets and liabilities at divorce. And so I suspect it's only a matter of time until Florida laws passed, legislature adopts some approach to give courts an express marching order to consider that type of evidence.
Well, looking at your website, and you have a very good website, I encourage our audience to go there and learn more about both of you as well. And it's kind of like a BOGO. You buy one, you get one. You know, it's a good thing. Seriously, uh-huh. It's a beautiful thing. But the type of family laws problems that do end in litigation, and I found this on your website as well, child custody, child support. You know, family law is a dynamic practice alone. You're dealing with some very interpersonal issues, but it's a no-fault state. You know, if I didn't like the dress you're wearing, I could divorce you. Plain and simple.
Is it that bad?
No. Looks better on you than it would on me.
But, come on, Phil.
Yeah. But with that said and done, technology has changed the practice, the dynamics of it. An example would be, we talked about cell phone records. And that is if you're proving infidelity, which is not an issue in terms of no fault, but it is an issue if I'm spending $100,000 on my mistress out of our joint money. Am I correct?
That's absolutely true. And with social media and ready access to technology in our pockets every day in our cell phones, it can be really difficult. You know, when clients come in and they say, well, look what I was able to pull up off of my husband's email, and here it is. Don't show me. there are very specific laws and case law that stands for the proposition that someone who is going into their spouse's email, their spouse's social media profile, mm-hmm, without express consent is actually violating any host of federal and state laws on wiretapping, on intercepting electronic communications.
Wow.
And I never want my clients to be in a position where they're trying to defend that behavior on the back end. There are lawful ways to get the information that you're looking for. We can subpoena the records from Facebook. We can subpoena the records from the cell phone provider. We can subpoena records from email and get communications in that way, and do it the right way.
Well,
we could do a whole show on that issue.
Oh, yeah.
About absolutely.
Spouses getting into each other's email and Facebook profiles. And a lot of time, your spouses know what your passwords are. And,
that's true.
You know, we use them together.
Exactly. Usually it's my precious pet's name. Usually. Used to be, but no longer. especially after the show.
After the show, yeah.
It's now going to be changed. But family law is a dynamic practice. It's not just about divorce. You've had clients that also were going to get divorced, and they got back together. I've had friends who got divorced. They started dating each other, and I think because nobody else would have them, they got married again.
One of my mentors absolutely did that, yes.
You know, it does happen. You don't know what you're missing until it's gone. But, you know, again, I wish we had more time. Tim, yourself as well as a practicing attorney, but also as a professor. You're an educator, and you're also an associate dean,
mm-hmm,
as well. And Laura, in terms of your background, it's tremendous, sincerely. the day-to-day operations are handled by both of you. If someone's listening and they're interested in speaking to you about potentially the divorce issues, alimony, or even if they have an out-of-state deadbeat dad, which is a whole nother issue I wish we were able to talk about, what's the best way to contact you?
Give us a call at 954-626-3380. We also have our Spanish-speaking associate, Chantel, who is happy to assist for Spanish-speaking callers.
Great.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. I know that even though majority, 75% of all Latins do speak English here, but they prefer to do business in their own language. Just like if I go to a French restaurant, I don't want it in French. I want an American, description of it. And, the website is, or, you know, I Googled yourself, Tim. You came up all over the place regarding your background and with being a professor as well. Mm-hmm. And I Googled you as well, and it came right up within the firm as well.
Great.
But what is the best website?
It's arcarolawgroup.com. That's ArcaroLawGroup.com.
Very good. Mike?
Thanks for listening, everybody. You can hear us every day at this time now. And please put your phones down. Do not. There's no reason to look at it. You'll be at your destination soon. Just keep listening to the radio. I want to especially thank Laura and Timothy Arcaro, our guests, and I want to thank the drummer from Rolled Whiskey, Nick Sals, for introducing me to them.
Great band.
And remember, everybody, be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, featuring Michael Santucci from the law firm of Santucci Priori, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation. They can be reached at 500law.com or at 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to BeLegalBuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448. Join us next Friday, 6 to 7 p.m., for Legal News and Review. Remember, be legal.